Okay, good morning everybody. Let us start in our meditation session. Please find a comfortable posture. Keep your back straight. Gently close your eyes. Relax your body. Take a few deep, long breaths, release them, and relax your body, relax your mind. Now feel your body, entire body. Let us start by practicing loving kindness. Sing thoughts of loving kindness to yourself first. Please repeat these positive and loving thoughts in your mind. May I be well. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be well. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be free from anger. May I be free from suffering. May I be free from jealousy. May I be free from danger. May I be free from illness. May I be well. May I be well. May I be Now, as we experience loving kindness, let us radiate the same loving thoughts to our friends. Send the same thoughts to our mothers. Send the same thoughts to our father. Send the same thoughts to our sisters. Send the same thoughts to our brothers. Send the same thoughts to our relatives. Send the same thoughts to our friends. May my mothers be well, happy and peaceful. May my fathers be well, happy and peaceful. May my brothers be well, happy and peaceful. May my sisters be well, happy and peaceful. May my teachers be well, happy and peaceful. May my relatives be well, happy and peaceful. May my friends be well, happy and peaceful. Now send your thoughts to the whole world. May all beings be free from anger. May all beings be free from suffering. May all beings be free from danger. May all beings be free from jealousy. May all beings be free from illness and injury. May all beings be well. 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 Now slowly turn your attention to your breath. Every breath you take in and take out is taken mindfully. Focus on your natural, ordinary breath. Breathe in, breathe out. Our mind thoughts are everywhere going, maybe future, maybe past. That is the nature. Now is the good time to practice in meditation. Breathe in, breathe out. Breathe in, breathe out. Now observe your mind and observe your body. Your body is relaxed and your mind is calm and peaceful. Please bring your palms together in front of your heart. Make a wish for yourself. May I be well. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May peace be with you. Thank you very much. Open your eyes. Please open chanting book number 4. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi
Dhammang saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi sangham saranam gacchami. Anuyavata sankara upada maya dhammino upajitva nirujjanti tesam upasamo sukho sabbe satta averahontu sabbe satta abhyapajahontu sabbe satta anigahontu sabbe satta sukhiyattanam Hariharantu Manu Pubbangama Dhamma Manu Setta Manu Manasache Padutena Vasativa Karotiva Tato nang dukkha mang veti chakkam vahato padam manu pubbangama dhamma manu setta manu maya manasache Pasannena Bhasativa Karotiva Tatonam Sukhamam Veti Chayava Anapayini. Thank you.
Okay, today's Dhamma talk, Rebecca. We kindly invite her present Dhamma talk.
Good morning. How's everyone doing? So Tyler was originally supposed to give the Dhamma talk today, and his schedule changed at the last minute. So I'm jumping in and filling in for him. He is rescheduling to talk on Monday evening. So if anyone wants to hear his talk, they can come on Monday. So my name is Rebecca Gesso. So I recognize many of your faces. I know many of you, but not everyone. And I am honored to serve as the executive director of this wonderful place that's a source of community and growth and empowerment to so many people, including myself. So thank you all for coming this morning. I've been thinking a lot recently, maybe the past few months, about the Buddha's teachings on the concept of self and how this connects to the self-transformation. Both the kind that is an intentional walk toward self-discovery and the kinds that are thrust upon us, often unwittingly, during times of intense grief, times of significant change in our minds, our bodies, our relationships, or our work relationships, financial stability, all different types of change. A few years ago, I read an article that really struck with me, and I've thought about it a lot. I've had many discussions about this, probably with a few people in this room I've probably even discussed this with, because it has really sat in my brain for years. The author stated that we are the only ones that see ourselves the way that we do. No one else exists with our vision of ourselves. Every person that we know, friends, relatives, coworkers, teachers, neighbors, each develop a belief about who we are based on their experiences, their observations, and along with what they've heard from others. Each has just a part of your life story, and they're missing the rest. And that part of your life story that they do have is then filtered through their own perception. Even for those who you shared so much of your life with, people like your parents or a spouse or a great friend that you've known for decades, they're also missing one key component, and that is our own mind. So our inner dialogue with ourselves, our emotions, all the parts of ourselves that we don't share with others get left out. So typically, I think we as humans show up in this world with the false belief that others must see us as we see ourselves. And that simply isn't a truth. This applies to really big general concepts, like I am a trustworthy and honest person. I'm smart and capable. I'm someone you can count on. Or, of course, I'm really financially responsible. These beliefs that we have in ourselves assume everyone else has for us, and they just simply don't. This also applies to smaller, more intimate perception of the moment. Things like, I feel kind of sad today. Or, currently, I'm really frustrated that something just happened to me and my mind can't let it go. Or maybe I didn't sleep very well last night, so I'm feeling really distractedly tired. Others cannot read our minds, and yet we walk around expecting them to. How often have you felt slighted or misunderstood? How often have you felt angry because someone else should have known better, should have treated you differently, should have known something about you? And these negative emotions are really tied up into our own ego, our own image of ourselves that is never shared by another person, not one. Our vision of self is collected over a lifetime of interactions with humans and animals in the world, but also all our interactions within our own mind. positive self-talk, negative self-talk, our dreams, our intentions, what we meant to do or say, why we've changed our mind about something, and a billion other details that we're the only one who's ever experienced. And interestingly, even this vision of ourselves that has been cultivated over our lifetime really doesn't truly take into account all that we are or have experienced. It's just the parts that we remember. Or maybe we're really good at popping on our rose-colored glasses and filtering out the bad stuff and clinging to the good. Or maybe we tend toward shame or guilt or jealousy, and our life is kind of like a bloopers reel, highlighting all our mistakes and our less glorious moments. So who am I really? Who am I today? Am I an accumulation of all that I've experienced and been? Am I just who I am in this moment? I find this idea of self fascinating and so confusing. It's really challenging to wrap my head around this, and I think it causes me and others a lot of suffering. I would say for myself, this concept probably has caused the most suffering in my life and relationships. Recently, I was reading an article on Lion's Roar by Melvin McLeod, and I like this statement he made, so I'm gonna read this part of the article. What is this false sense of self, what we call ego? It's the mistaken belief that we are a separate, independent entity with some sort of unchanging personal essence at our core. And this self simply doesn't exist. It's a fiction that we've created based on our ignorance about the true nature of ourselves and the true nature of reality. But because we believe this self exists, we struggle to serve and protect it at all cost. We cause ourselves and others endless suffering in the process. It's the false organizing principle of our lives. As a student of the Buddha, with a great love of discussing all of these philosophical concepts regarding the Buddha's teachings, I always get really tripped up by this discussion. I think one of the first intimate discussions I had with somebody over the intellectual aspect of Buddhism was about the concept of self, you know, maybe 18 or 20 years ago. And I'm really fond of discussing this topic, so I have had many, many discussions about it. It's just really hard to wrap my head around the idea that I am ego. I'm a sentient being experiencing all that life has to offer with all of my senses and all of my oceans, and yet I'm not all that I appear to be. And I'm never who people think I am, and I'm often not even who I think I am. I believe that these teachings are really just saying to us, we are not unchanging. We are not fixed. And because I am not permanently attached to being just one way, although my ego wants that to be very true, I need to keep showing up with the right intention and the right action. I am not just one specific way, but I can choose to act in specific ways in each moment. For example, I see myself as inherently kind. Inside, I know that I work very hard at acting in a kind manner because kindness is really important to me as a human being in all parts of my life. But everyone may not see me as a kind person. I am kind today, but tomorrow I may act in a manner that is unkind. Am I now no longer a kind person because of that one act? Or does it take 2 unkind acts? Or does it take 10 unkind acts? At what point do I tip from one to the other? Or can I be both kind and unkind at the same time? You could literally drive yourself insane diving into this pool of analysis and never come out the better for it. So over the years, I've settled on a few guidelines that I find work for me really well, and I think they've enhanced both my relationship with myself and my relationships with others. Number 1, give others grace. They can't read your mind. They won't always act in the manner you want them to. So give them room to misunderstand and give them room not to show up as you want them to sometimes. Number two, keep healthy boundaries. I think that my daughter probably thinks I have this on the fridge at home because I've probably said this to her a million times in her life. Keep healthy boundaries. But don't have so much compassion and empathy that you become a doormat. Intention matters. Number three, do the same for others. Observe who they are today. Observe how they show up most of the time, but don't cling to an expectation that's unfair or unachievable. And the last one, number four, if you know me, you know I have done this to you probably. Ask questions kindly. Assumptions lead to misunderstandings. So if someone does or says something that you think is out of line or maybe offensive or you're not sure what they meant by that, don't be afraid to ask. Ask them to repeat what they said and ask them what they meant by that. You will discover very quickly that there was either a pure-hearted intention, a pure-hearted misunderstanding, or that their intention was impure. But we're afraid to ask sometimes, so don't be afraid to ask people to clarify. What I think so many of us find difficult is that even when we get all these things right the majority of the time, we've done the work, we have a practice, we have a good intention to have good relationships. The reality is that when we work on loving ourselves and accepting people as they are, that never stays constant. Change is always happening. Big changes, small changes, unexpected changes. And all of these changes often feel really unsettling to us because we cling to the fixed sense of ourself and the fixed and unchanging sense of others. My husband, Mark, and life partner of 23 years passed away in September of 2022. Last September, my only daughter moved away to attend UW-Eau Claire for her freshman year of college. I had to find somehow the inner strength to feed her pet snake for 9 months, which was not fun. 3 weeks ago, she moved back home. So now we're readjusting to how do we live together in a home for the summer. All of these life changes are constantly happening to us. The clocks move forward and back twice a year, and we have to change time. Seasons change, and along with that changes our chores and our hobbies, how much time we spend indoors. We're growing older, and we can never escape illness or injury. All of life is calling upon us to manage these transitions, some good, some bad, but many of them unwanted. And rather than asking for change to stop, I want to keep working on not resisting the change, not attaching myself to the way I prefer things to be. Mindfully, I'm going to look to improve my skills of observation, my ability to be flexible, and my desire to find contentment with who and where I am. And I like to close with this reading from Pema Chodron on this topic that I really enjoy. What the fundamental ambiguity of being human points to is that as much as we want to, we can never say this is the only true way. This is how it is, end of discussion. As individuals, we have plenty of fundamentalist tendencies. We use them to comfort ourselves. We grab onto a position or belief as a way of neatly explaining reality, unwilling to tolerate the uncertainty and discomfort of staying open to any other possibility. We cling to that position as our personal platform, and we become very dogmatic about it. The root of these fundamentalist tendencies, these dogmatic tendencies, is our fixed identity, a fixed view we have of ourselves as good or bad, worthy or unworthy, this or that. And with a fixed identity, we have to busy ourselves with trying to rearrange reality when reality doesn't conform to our view. When I first came to Gampo Abbey, I thought of myself as a likable, flexible, open-hearted, open-minded person. And part of that was true. But there was another part that wasn't. For one thing, I learned I was a terrible director. The other residents felt disempowered by me. They pointed out my shortcomings, but I couldn't hear what they were saying because my fixed identity was so strong. Every time new people came to live at the Abbey, I got the same kind of negative feedback, but still I didn't hear it. This went on for years. Then one day, as if they had all gotten together and staged an intervention, I finally heard what everyone had been telling me about how my behavior negatively affected them. At last, the message got through to me. Meditation practice starts to erode and fix that identity problem. As you sit, you begin to see yourself with more clarity, and you notice how attached you are to your opinions about yourself. This is what it means to be in denial. You can't hear anything that doesn't fit into your fixed identity, even something positive. You did a great job. You have a wonderful sense of humor. All of that gets filtered through your fixed identity. You can't take it in unless it's already part of your self-definition. In Buddhism, we call this notion of fixed identity ego clinging. And it's how we try to put solid ground under our feet in our ever-shifting world. Meditation practice starts to erode that. As you sit, you begin to notice more and more how attached you are to your opinions about yourself. And often, people find that the first blow to their fixed identity is precipitated by a crisis, a time of great transformation, when things start to fall apart in your life, as they did in mine. Actually, this is your fixed identity crumbling, and as Chogyam Trungpa used to tell us, it is a cause for celebration, not a cause for sorrow. Does anyone have any questions or comments that they'd like to add? Gus? Thank you.
So there's something else going on there. And obviously fiction is a story.
Yeah.
It's a story that I write.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I might get to the end of it and realize that the spy got caught.
Yeah.
You know, and now he ends up, you know, getting dumped into a river somewhere. And I have to change the end of the story.
Yeah.
And realize that I can change it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I was just listening to this speaker that I like on social media. It was like a blurb of a video. And they said, here's something we don't ever think about. When we're talking to ourselves in our minds, we have one part doing the talking, one person doing the talking, and one person listening. Did you ever think which one you are?
Yeah.
And I went, oh my gosh, I never thought of it that way. Are we the one doing the talking? Or are we the one doing the listening? Or are we maybe neither of those? And we're that space in between going, which one of these do I want to be? Which one am I going to pick for me? And that's exactly what you just said. And I think that's what meditation is for me. Meditation is training my brain to say in that space, do I want to feel jealous? Do I want to like this? And then I get that little space before I can react or choose. Thank you, Gus. I love that. I can. My email address is rebecca@bluelotustemple.org. If you,
okay.
I would happily send you my notes.
Rebecca.
Some people like to talk and just like wing it. I cannot wing it. I have to like think all my thoughts up. So I have it already done. Any other questions or comments?
I just want to say I think she might need that to be repeated.
Did you say that?
Did you get it?
Rebecca@bluelotustemple.org. One of the ways that I am dealt with a sense of self. Yeah, so my daughter is 19, and I talk about her a lot because I adore my daughter, if you know me. And so, like, I read somewhere when she was younger that we as parents should really shut up around age 14. That we taught our kids everything that they need to know for the most part till they become an adult, and everything you're saying is just repeating, and that's why your kid's so annoyed with you. Because you're just nagging at them and repeating things. And I went, oh, that's really powerful. I can relate to that from my own teenage years. And so my husband and I tried to practice that a lot. But the one bit of advice that I always gave her is pay attention to the five people you spend the most time with, because that's who you will be at the end of this year. If you pick friends who all like to party and who are hanging out, or you pick friends who are really focused on things that are good or important, that's going to seep into you. Even when you think you're helping them, or you're better than them, or you're the teacher, nope, that's not what happens. You end up being just like them. And just like in the past few weeks, there was a huge study that was released, I want to say it was maybe like Harvard University, that their conclusion was that 95% of who you are is who you share time with. 95%, like, that's huge. Pick your friends carefully. And pick how much time you spend with your relatives carefully. Be careful. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Any other comments?
A quote that I read one time that I thought was kind of interesting, kind of played into this, is, I am not who I think I am. I am not who you think I am. I am who I think you think I am.
I'll have to spend about a year thinking about that. I'll get back to you next year after I've done pondering that. Yeah, but that's how complicated it is. And if we spend too much time on it, it actually doesn't have much value to it at all, right? Because the reality is maybe none of that even matters. What matters is, how did I show up today?
Yeah.
What matters is, what can I do now in the present or in the very near present? And if I just keep doing that right, even when I fall down and I screw it up, just keep picking yourself up and doing it again, you know, someday you'll be 100 years old and you'll go, oh, I got that right most of the time. And the big picture didn't really matter if you kept doing it right in the moments. Very good. Kurt?
Yeah, kind of touching on, piggybacking on what a lot of other people have said, I think you talk about change in the sense of self and how you pinpoint the self and it's always changing. There's one thing that never changes that I've found to be my sense of true self, and it's something, if you think about it, but it's so close and it's so fundamental, it's easy to miss. So the 5-year-old Rebecca, there was a sense of self there that's this very same, that hasn't changed, as a sense of self you have right now. And that's that presence, the presence. I'm there. I was there as the 5-year-old Kurt. I'm here. I'm present for the 50 years. And it's that sense of presence that's fundamental. It doesn't change. It doesn't go away. Always been there, always been the same.
I love that analogy, because what our ego tells us is, don't compare me to a 5-year-old. Like, oh, I'm so much smarter, and I'm this and this and that. But really, the 5-year-old probably got it right more often than we did. Right?
And one more thing to piggyback on that. That sense of presence. You can't be present unless there's something to be present to. Mm. So this relative world that we experience,
I love that.
There's no difference. So that presence is dependent on this isness of life.
Yeah.
And if that wasn't there, the presence wouldn't be there either.
Yeah.
So that's where the separation stops.
Yeah. Right? I love that.
It's from the past to the future. So the presence itself is not there. It's because it's moving. You know, to add to what you're saying, or not to argue with what you said, it's true, but the 5-year-old is also movement. See what I'm saying?
So and add to that conversation, go talk to a physicist about how time isn't really linear, and then that, like, really throws away
your whole sense of anything. Don't even think about that at all.
Anyone else have something they want to add?
I just got a quick one. I often, because I'm really into biology and nature and all the physical parts, that's what attracted me to Buddhism, actually, is because it's about reality, you know, it's tangible, you could actually experience it for yourself, keep your eyes open. But the one thing I always think of with no self, is I think about biologically, on every level, cellular level, we are always changing. Every single second, we're always dying in every moment, we're always beginning in every moment.
And so when we think of it that way, then I think, yeah, and it's the same way with my emotions and my thoughts. It's always temporary.
Yeah.
It's always in a state of transformation.
And yet, that is probably the hardest thing that we struggle with as Americans, or as humans. I've often thought, has that really always been true? Like, right? And is that true for other cultures? Do we uniquely as Americans in the present day, is this harder for us? Or was it always this hard? I don't know the answer to that. But to my observation is that so many people I know and love struggle with this a lot. So whether or not it's true, today it is really, really true. It's a real tough thing for so many of us today.
I had to get up curves to raise my hand. But I want to model for my daughter. I just want to say thank you. I am grateful to hear that message with my daughter and honored that she wanted to come. And she gets it right more than me if she's nine.
There you go, sign her up.
You see a stool for the podium. Any other questions or comments?
I'm sort of new at all this, but I hear like we are not our thoughts. And keeping our thoughts, not identifying ourselves with our thoughts and all the kinds of more separate from us, it's by rising consciousness.
Yep.
I don't know if you can expound on that a little bit.
Yeah, so I mean that's like a real core part of this self-discussion. But, I think until you've studied Buddhism, I think maybe there's some psychology that's like this, some cognitive behavioral therapy stuff that's really derived from Buddhism that touches upon this. But really, Buddhism's, one of its main tenets is this, the idea that we believe that the thoughts in our head are us, and they're just not. They're part of who we are, but we get to pick which ones we want, right, and which ones we don't. So, if you've ever been to my house, I love quotes. And so I whenever I find a quote or a little passage that inspires me, I print it out and I put it on my fridge. And then I just kind of change it regularly. Because I found that when I walk past it, I go, I need to think about that a little more. Like, it helps keep it present for me. And so one that was on my fridge over the winter for a really long time was, we are not our thoughts. We are the thoughts that we choose to put into action. And that is the first thing I thought of when you said that. That's it. We are not all that. In Buddhism, they call it your monkey mind. We are not all that, right? All that scary, bad stuff towards ourselves, towards others, questioning all that weirdness, everything that you don't, say out loud. But what we are is the ones that we choose. That we say, I'm going to own this. I'm going to show up this way with an intention. To ourselves and others. Yeah, thank you. Great discussion. Any other questions or comments?
When you mentioned clinging very much to our idea of being really a good person and this is the right way and I have everything right, it really struck me with politics. And I'm not going to get into politics, but I think I see that a lot where people are like, oh no, I'm right, this has to be the way, and this is good, and if you're not agreeing with me, you're evil.
Yeah.
You're a bad person. And I think just having that little bit of openness would help everyone.
So much. Like, my 78-year-old dad is a lifelong NRA card-carrying Republican. And he and I have different views on almost everything. But we can go out to breakfast, we can talk for 2 hours, and at the end I go, do you see how we overlap on 95% of what we believe in? And he goes, yeah, you're right, we do. So politics is telling us that our core things that we want, like family and comfort and good health care and good education, and we want to love each other and live in a good community, really, we're all on the same page with that. We have so little that actually divides us, but we focus on all that divides us, and it might get used against us by some people in this room. But we really do have much more in common than not if we can get over all that stuff and really talk about it and love each other. Absolutely. Go find a Republican friend and go out to lunch with them.
Yes.
Maybe they're in this world. No offense to your Republican. Any other questions or comments?